It's a beautiful little bassinet. It's been in six of the world's leading museums. It's in the permanent collection of the Smithsonian because it's just such a beautiful design. And it rocks and shushes babies slowly throughout the night, imitating the womb sensation. And when babies fuss, the bed responds as an advanced algorithm. So it drives a responsive sound in motion, increasing four different incrementally higher levels.
Welcome to the AWS Health Innovation Podcast, where you can learn from entrepreneurs and investors who are driving progress in healthcare and life science around the globe. As a pediatrician and child developmental expert, Dr. Harvey Karp has dedicated his career to understanding and meeting the needs of infants. His company, Happiest Baby, manufactures the Snoo Smart Sleeper, a robotic bassinet that automatically responds to fussing with gentle rocking and soothing sounds, replicating sensations from the womb. The FDA-approved medical device is designed to establish healthy sleep patterns and reduce the risk of SIDS. I'm Alex Merwin, and hosting today's conversation is my colleague Yin He, Principal Business Development for Healthcare and Life Science Startups at AWS. Yin will interview Harvey about his journey creating the Snoo, obtaining FDA clearance as a rare direct-to-consumer medical device, and his vision for supporting families through smart infant technology. Let's get started.
Hello, and welcome to the AWS Health Innovation Podcast. I'm excited to guest host the session today. My name is Yin He, and I lead our work with early-stage healthcare and life sciences startups and investors at AWS. I'm trained as a lab scientist with a PhD in molecular bio and genomics. Prior to AWS, I was an early employee and operator at a venture-backed startup, building cloud labs and software tools to help pharma and biotech accelerate drug discovery. I'm so thrilled today to be joined by Dr. Harvey Karp. Like a lot of founders that we feature, Harvey's had multiple careers and seemingly lives before embarking on his entrepreneur journey. He's a pediatrician, a published author, and the focus of today's podcast, the founder and CEO of Happiest Baby and creator of the Snoo. Harvey, welcome. As I've told you personally, I'm so thrilled to host this episode. As a first-time mom to a toddler, and of course, being in tech, I was completely obsessed towards the later end of my pregnancy with researching all of the newest technologies and learnings and infant care, just trying to equip myself, right, with all of the knowledge that's out there. And time again, I kept hearing from friends and just from other resources about something called the Snoo. So when I actually looked into it, it was a smart bassinet to promote healthy sleep for the baby. And I'm sure we'll dive into it today. But I think the other thing I want to mention that's really exciting about this episode is this is one of the few, if not the only episode, don't quote me on this, but I think it is, that features a direct-to-consumer medical device, right, that has to be FDA approved. We talked to a lot of startups that are selling to large enterprises, right? Health systems, insurers, pharma, and biotechs. But I think this one's truly unique in hearing about how you navigate the journey as a direct-to-consumer medical device. All right. Without further ado, please, let's dig in. So excited to learn more from you.
And great to talk to you, Yin. Really a pleasure. And not just you being a scientist and an entrepreneur yourself, but as a working mom, because talk about living many lives and juggling a lot of balls. You're doing that in real life, in real time. And many other people are in our culture, and it's a challenge. And something that as a pediatrician is really important to me, not just trying to affect the public health, but the each individual family's health.
Thank you for that and for acknowledging that. It is a struggle, I have to admit. And I know there's thousands of moms out there that feel me on this. But I think that's what's cool is to learn about some of the technologies that actually can truly help augment our capabilities and especially learnings as new parents to really provide peace of comfort and peace of mind, especially when it comes to these new tools. I definitely don't want to waste any more time. First, I'd love to just learn, tell us a little bit more about your background and what inspired you to build the company.
Like you said, I'm a pediatrician and child development specialist, and I practiced in an office in Santa Monica for almost 30 years. And I've always been interested in unsolved problems or puzzles. And one of the ones in pediatrics, which is so mundane and yet so pernicious, is this thing about colic, crying babies that go on and on for hours. And they joke about it on sitcoms. The guy's so tired, he brushes his teeth with the sunscreen or something. But it is a serious burden on families, tens of billions of dollars in healthcare costs because of depression and child abuse and neglect and parental discord and accidents and injuries and illness and stress injuries and all sorts of things, and tens of billions of dollars of employer costs because of poor retention, poor productivity, errors, accidents, et cetera, related to exhausted parents who just can't get back to work. And actually, McKinsey did a survey showing that about a third of new moms don't come back to work for a year after they have their babies. And oftentimes they don't come back to the same place of work. So it's a real burden on employers. Anyway, when I, in pediatrics, I was interested in unsolved problems and began to realize really a solution to this thing called colic, and recognizing that the problem was that babies aren't ready to be born after 9 months. They really need another 4 or 5 months of holding and rocking and shushing the uterine experience to keep them stable before they're really ready to be in the world. The only reason they come out when they do is because their heads are so big, they can barely make it out as it is. So I started writing about that, and that's what The Happiest Baby on the Block was really about. And I revealed in that book, or discussed in that book, an observation that had never been made before, which is that babies are born with kind of an off switch for crying and an on switch for sleep. It's a reflex, and you trigger it by imitating five aspects of the womb sensory experience that babies have. And when you do that, you can calm colicky babies often in seconds, and you can add hours to a baby's sleep. So that was really new information. And what was cool about that for a lot of people is that it isn't just babies. Adults as well are put into a trance by the rhythms and the sounds. That's why you walk down an airplane aisle and 20% of the people are asleep already, because that's a deep part of our biology that was never really described before. Anyway, I taught that for and lectured about that for many years, but then I really started to get frustrated because I wasn't seeing an impact of that, even though millions of people read the books, wasn't seeing an impact on the public health, reduction of postpartum depression, reduction especially of SIDS or infant sleep deaths. And do you have an idea about how many children in the United States die every year in their sleep? Ever heard that number?
Oh my gosh, it's probably a number I don't want to know. Just out of paranoia.
Probably.
Let's talk about it.
It's about 3,500.
Oh, I was going to say hundreds, which is quite alarming, right, in my mind. But and that's just in the U.S., right?
That's just U.S. So it's equivalent to the number of Americans who were killed in 9/11, except for babies, it happens year after year. And just to give context, in the 1960s, most states across America instituted car seat laws for infants. And the reason was because, as you can imagine, in a car accident, babies can hit the windshield, and there were deaths. At its worst, there were about 250 deaths a year of children under 1 year of age. And that led to every single state in the nation promulgating a law that said that it would be child endangerment to drive without putting them in a car seat. We are now seeing 3,500 babies a year dying in their sleep. And so the imperative is obvious. So anyway, about 12 years ago, I was giving a lecture saying if another country were killing 3,500 of our babies every year, we'd probably go to war. We wouldn't sit by idly. Why weren't we doing more to end those deaths? And then I went back to the hotel. I was talking to my wife and I said, we could do that. I think we could do that. It would maybe take a year and a half. We could build a bed that secures babies and rocks them and helps them sleep. This was 12, 14 years ago. We were so naive, but I think you have to be naive.
We always talk about it because you just absolutely have to be passionate, but also have a ton of resilience in order to be a founder and stay in the startup journey and game.
Yeah. And have an optimism that is properly unrealistic, but that is compelling for you. Anyway, so that was the deal. So we started this company as a way of introducing an intervention that would keep babies safely sleeping throughout the night and try to reduce the risk of their death.
Yeah, I actually had a question later on about the Back to Sleep campaign, right? It was more about how there's just new science and new data coming out, right, about pediatrics and infants, and how do you think about that relative to product development, right, and innovation? But I think I want to touch here. So I think the Back to Sleep campaign, right, was launched, I think it wasn't launched until pretty recently, 1994. Can you provide perspective? Like, where were you in your kind of entrepreneurial journey at that time?
I was working in my pediatric office at that time, but it was an incredibly embarrassing moment because for decades, we told parents, and I personally told parents, that babies should never sleep on the back because they could choke on their vomit. They should only sleep on their stomach, and babies sleep better on the stomach. Unfortunately, they also die more often. And as you said, in the late 80s, 1990s, we learned about the importance of back sleep. And then in 1994 in the US, we started this back to sleep campaign. And pretty much within a couple of years, we saw the number of infant deaths from SIDS drop from 5,500 a year to about 3,500 a year. So it went down about 40-45%. It really was. And we thought that we were on the verge of wiping this out. We thought that if we just persuade people to put their babies on the back, that would be the end of the story. And then we even added more things like breastfeed and keep them in the room with you and don't bring them into bed, though, because they can suffocate in your pillow. And what really happened, though, was from the year 2000 and forward, so for the last 20 years, we've made no progress, zero progress in reducing these deaths. It's been 3,500 a year every single year for the past 22 years. And so you might ask the question, why was it so successful? And then why suddenly wasn't it more successful? Which really was what my motivation was to get it to become an entrepreneur. And the answer is because babies don't like to sleep on the back. Babies wake up more, they cry more, parents get more exhausted, and then they start doing unsafe things. So bed sharing, for example, since the year 2000 has doubled. Not because the culture has suddenly changed that we think that's the best thing, although there are cultural shifts involved. It's really because desperate parents who now work one and two jobs need to get sleep and they don't have extra help. And they're drawn or tempted to do things that are unsafe just because they're trying not to drive their car into a wall the next day.
Yeah, I thought when you're in college, sometimes you have a sleepless night here and there, right? You're up cramming for an exam and you feel like a superhero, but I've never felt the type of sleep deprivation. I think sometimes I'm still in a little bit of a fog, right? As you're still in the toddler phases. So I can definitely attest that you just really do get to that level of desperation where you need sleep, right? It's such a critical component of being and just survival.
Yeah, parents lose about 40 days of sleep in the first year of their child's life. I don't know if you've heard this, but we actually train Navy SEALs and our commandos to endure torture by putting them through chronic sleep deprivation with the sound of crying babies over loudspeakers. That is like the most dastardly thing we can think of doing.
Welcome to parenthood over and over on repeat.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. So I want to learn a little bit more about the regulatory pathway for this new, right? So it was granted FDA de novo approval in March 2023. So congratulations. I think that's a huge accomplishment.
Thanks.
It was the first, right, for its kind.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that process and why was it important for you? I mean, you didn't have to go through it, right? Why was it important for you to do so?
Yeah, maybe I'll take one step back first and just say what SNOO does for folks who don't know about it. It's a beautiful little bassinet. It's been in six of the world's leading museums. It's in the permanent collection of the Smithsonian because it's just such a beautiful design. And it rocks and shushes babies slowly throughout the night, imitating the womb sensation. And when babies fuss, the bed responds, has an advanced algorithm. So it drives a responsive sound and motion, increasing four different incrementally higher levels. So it basically imitates what your grandmother would do or what an experienced caregiver would do. And it does that throughout the night or through nap time. And people use it during the day too, when you're cooking dinner, or taking a shower or playing with your three-year-old. And you just need 15, 20 minutes here and there. So it's a 24-hour helper, if you will. And we've now measured about 650 million hours of infant sleep. And we've seen that the bed adds an hour to 2 hours to the baby's sleep. If you drove him in the car all night, you could get something similar. But it responds when the baby cries and it's able to calm the baby's crying. We measure about 28 million cry episodes and it calms the crying 50% of the time, usually within a minute or so. It sleep trains the baby. It keeps the baby safely on the back throughout sleep. And like I said, we're now studying the neuronurturing effects of rhythmic stimulation. So when we launched that, it was a consumer electronic product, and it was like this bougie baby bed that celebrities got and that kind of thing. No one could afford it. And why did you bring it out so expensive? But of course, when you bring out new technology, you have to pay the bills. And new technology is often very expensive when it comes out. Breast pumps cost $2,000 when they first came out, and now they're $40 to get them. But so our goal, however, from the very beginning was that this would always be a device to get the broadest access possible. And so what we planned was, and that's why we built it to be so robust and be able to go tens of millions of cycles. And so within just a couple of years, we started a rental program. And now anyone can rent this in the US for about $5 a day, and started an employer program. So if thousands of people get a free new rental for 6 months from their employer, from JPMorgan Chase and Under Armour and Snapchat and Activision Blizzard and National Air Traffic Controllers Union and Dunkin' Donuts and Cheesecake Factory. And this has all been a process to be able to get it ultimately to the people who need it the most, which are really people living in poverty, people who are on Medicaid, people who are living in rural areas where they don't have enough family support, people living in the inner cities who are struggling, single parents, et cetera. And so getting the FDA authorization was an important step in the path of being able to persuade insurance companies and third-party payers like Medicaid, state Medicaid programs, that this was an important device to bring to their constituents, not just interesting consumer products.
Yeah, with scientifically backed data and outcomes, right, for the health of the infant, but not just that, but also for the health and sanity of the parents as well. So I can personally attest, I decided to rent a SNU, live in a small New York City apartment. And so for us, we didn't want to have to store it or anything. And it was perfect. It was so easy. It was so simple. It came, you know, shipped. Everything looked new, right? It worked perfectly. So I think that kind of leads to my next question around how do you make the SNU just more accessible, right? So it's really great to hear you say that from the beginning, that was the ultimate vision. Because as I was going through my pregnancy, I just realized even getting a doula, right? And just folks to have that additional care and additional expertise around not just the infant when the infant's born, but also around the mom and other parents and caregivers. A lot of that was out of pocket, right? And so not very accessible, right, to the vast majority of the population. And so I think it's really inspiring to hear you talk about the vision of how to make that much more accessible.
And this feeds into really a complex sociologic issue, which is supporting working women, supporting families in our culture, because families are our future, and ultimately encouraging the birth rate. Because we all talk a lot about climate crisis and what's happening around the world with global warming, but there's another global crisis that is actually going to hit probably 15, 20 years before climate crisis really peaks. And that's the population crisis. In the 1970s, we were worried about overpopulation, but now the population has been plummeting in China, in Korea, in Japan, in Italy, in Spain, in Greece, in Scandinavia, Germany, United States population birth rate has dropped about 20% over the last decade. This is going to be an absolute crisis if we don't have a population to be able to meet the needs of the nation. And obviously, some of that will be filled in by robots and AI, and a lot of work is being done there. But we're seeing you need 2.1 babies. I got it. My goal is to encourage you to have one more baby. You need 2.1 babies to just keep a population stable. And in places like South Korea, the birth rate is 0.72 or 0.74. It is a disaster. They're spending hundreds of billions of dollars on tax credits, which haven't really worked to encourage the birth rate, because parents say, hey, I want a little bit more money, but I need help. I need childcare. I need support. And so SNU, as part of that, we think is going to be a really helpful part, because SNU is like childcare for the first 6 months of life to help support the parents getting through that journey. And if you were to hire a babysitter, a 19-year-old to come into your house and hold your child for 1 hour while you cook dinner, you'd probably pay $20, $25 in New York. SNU for $5 to give you 24-hour help throughout the night, which no babysitter is going to do for you anyway, on weekends and holidays, is actually a pretty good deal. And for employers, and governmental agencies. Like, we're working to get into the U.S. military right now. That cost is really between $4 and $5. So it's really, it's the cost of a cup of coffee to give the baby safer life, the mother and father safer period, or the parent safer, greater safety and support, and sleep train the baby. It's pretty much been a no-brainer for people using it. Hey, do you know what a net promoter score is?
Yeah.
As a rating of how much people love a product, Apple products like rate about a 60 or even a 70 because they're so beloved. Most things rate about a 0, meaning that it's a balance of people who love it and don't love it. And Snoo is rated about an 89. Wow. So
waiting for that
it really has got a lot of love out there.
Yeah. I'll say, Harvey, my only complaint with the Snoo is it supports only the first 6 months. I need a toddler version of the Snoo or up until 4 or 5 years old. That will be my feedback.
Are you still using, do you still use white noise? Are you using that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. We have white noise and very good sleep habits that he developed. He's a very good sleeper.
We just came out with Snoopy, which is a white noise machine nightlight for toddlers. And one of the things I love about that, it has the Snoo sounds, which are really the specially engineered. It's one of the few that has specially engineered sounds that are designed for sleep promotion and calming crying. But also, it has two settings to teach children mindful breathing. Mm. And so I love it because a 3-year-old, 4-year-old can already learn to control themselves and build that internal emotional resilience. And they like to do it by themselves. They like to do it without their mom or dad looking over their shoulders. So it's been a lot of fun watching kids start using that.
Yeah, I'm getting a lot of, I do it these days every time I try to help or do anything. Yeah. So I can definitely see that enabling them, right, to be able to help develop, right, emotional controls and resiliency. Yeah.
One more thing, just to build on the complexity here, because you mentioned about it being unusual to have a consumer product go out and get FDA authorization, but this is also a B2B product. So in other words, besides it being used by corporations as a benefit, it's in about 160 hospitals.
Oh, I had no idea. So I knew the D2C, I knew the employer coverage, but I didn't know about this aspect of the business.
Yeah, it's been about 4 years it's been used in hospitals, and it's used for premature babies. It's used for babies withdrawing from opiates. It's used for babies after heart surgery. And a couple of studies that were published last year showed that each bed, we surveyed nurses in the hospitals. 97% of nurses say that it reduces their stress. 97% said it improved care. And on average, each bed reduces nurse labor 4 to 5 hours per day, which makes Snoo really the first. There are robots in the operating rooms to do precision surgery, but this is really the first care robot in the world that is helping to supplement the ability of nurses to meet the needs. And we all know nurses are overburdened and really burning out. And so we're doing a lot of work in terms of reducing nurse burnout by using her.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, especially the pediatric nurses in those early days. They're coming in, everything's written on a whiteboard, right? In terms of a schedule, a lot of manual tasks. So I can imagine anything that helps to alleviate and create some efficiency in their routine is definitely helpful. Okay, so it's you had this idea, right? You wanted to embark on this entrepreneurial journey, naively thought you could build a SMB if you do it in a year or so. From there, tell us, how did you then go on to capitalize the company? Did you raise traditional venture capital? Were you able to self-fund it for a while? How did you get this off the ground?
Yeah, we just started with seed money. We had a couple of close friends who were really excited by the prospect of, can we build a bed that does something that was never done before? Can we add an hour or two to a baby's sleep? Can we automatically sleep train them? Can we soothe at least 50% of crying automatically by the responses of the bed? And can we dramatically reduce things like infant sleep death and postpartum depression and the many negative sequelae that we know happen when parents are exhausted? So we had a lot of excitement around that. And that's the way we really got our initial funding.
Got it. So it was all like a family and friends round, and then it just took off from there.
Yeah, exactly. Proving out the first proof points and building it, really the hardest thing actually was the mechanical approach to this. Turns out that the algorithm and the science behind the responsiveness, we pretty much understood. And I started out, actually it was really fun because I met a guy who was one of the leads at the MIT Media Lab, who had read my book, and he used it with his two kids. And he was on sabbatical, and he said, this is a cool project. Let's do it together. So we partnered up, and I was flying to Boston from Los Angeles almost every weekend to do field testing and improvise and modify the bed. But it turns out, even with the best engineers, they couldn't figure out how to make this bed go 20, 30 million cycles without it squeaking and creaking and making noises. And so that actually turned out to be really the hard problem that we had in that mechanical way that was the breakthrough that was required for us to be able to get to market.
Oh, that's interesting. It makes me think of when you go to IKEA and they're doing that like pressure tester on one of those chairs over and over, how many repetitions and the quality. But yeah, I think for those people who haven't had a Snoop, it's just constantly moving as long as the baby's crying or you can set it to move. But I don't know, like in an average, say the baby uses it for 6 months, like how many movements is that on average, would you say, for the bed?
It'll probably be, it's many millions that will occur over a 6 month period. Because what we're learning is that there are a lot of ideas that we had about babies that are completely wrong. We just talked about one of them, which is not stomach sleeping, but back sleeping is safer. Another one is securing babies in bed. You would never drive without them being in a car seat. You wouldn't even put them in a high chair or a stroller unless you belted them in. But the number one place healthy babies die is in their own bed or their parents' bed. And we blithely put them there for 12 hours a night. I hope they don't roll to their death tonight. It's crazy to even hear those words, but that's what parents are doing every single night. So I think that in another few years, it's going to be the norm that parents secure their babies when they sleep. But there's another thing that we're working on now and we're building the evidence on, which is really an eye opener, which is what is most nurturing for a child's brain? Is it to be in dark silence on their back by themselves for 12 to 14 hours a night? Or is it to be held and rocked and shushed and responded to for 12 hours at night? Because what we're learning is that rocking and shushing, it's not just a cute, sweet thing to do. Babies need that for their stability of their nervous system. And if you ask 1,000 babies, you want to sleep in the dark silence by yourself? Or would you like to sleep all night in my arms? We know what the babies would say. But now the science is showing us that it actually is important for brain development. And so that's the other thing I think our culture a few years from now is going to recognize, that putting babies in relative sensory deprivation all night is not the best way for us to nurture the development of a child.
As you were building this company, maybe we can share something. What was the most unexpected thing that happened? Other than it not getting done in a year, as expected.
I guess two things. One was how long it takes to go from an idea into something that is actually delivering an effect. How many steps are involved? It's thousands of steps, thousands of decisions. Another big one was actually investors, and that investors give you money, but doesn't necessarily mean they're going to help you build your business. And it's been interesting for me that some of them have, we've got some great investors, and some of them that just, you can ask them 10 times for a favor and they're busy doing other things. So that surprised me, because I thought you're invested in a company, you're going to put your shoulder to the wheel. But of course, there are different philosophies of different investors.
Sure. Yeah. I'm curious, between the time of, say, company creation to the first MVP product, how long did that end up taking?
I would say it was about 2 years. We did 80% quickly.
Yeah.
And the last 20% was the tough part.
That's always how it goes. That sounds about right.
Yeah. The interesting thing about this, though, is the product market fit. That's another thing I'm sure you talk to people a lot about. And in this case, having been a pediatrician for so many years and really worked in the space and really being the domain expert, I had a very clear sense of what would work and what parents needed. So that was really a superpower that we had as a company to be able to. And we were asked backwards, because we already had a national brand before we even had our first product, because of the books and the videos that I had put out. So people knew my work already. So that made it a lot easier for us.
Yeah, having that established brand. And again, the company's happiest baby, right? Snoo is just one of the product offerings. Mm-hmm. All right, I think we'll end with this last question. What advice would you give to fellow entrepreneurs, right, that are innovating in the healthcare space?
Oh my gosh, find people to work with. a lot of times you're the solo banging your drum out there, but you really need people. In my case, I was so lucky with my wife, who is brilliant in 100 different ways. And so we're a yin and yang in our capabilities. She found our factories. She raised most of our money. Yeah. Trivial things like that. Hired our executive team.
Wow.
So it was really essential. There would be no company if Nina hadn't done all of that incredible work. Find a team is what I think is the most important part, because there will be great days and bad days, and you need somebody to keep moving forward with.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Harvey, it was such a pleasure. Yeah. Thank you for sharing your story and for telling us more about the company and the products.
Thanks, and really great talking to you. We'll talk more about toddlers when we get off.
For sure.
And see if I persuaded you yet to have a second child. Take care.
Thanks for joining us today for the AWS Health Innovation Podcast. If you want to get in touch with AWS, please check out our show notes where you can find a link. If you enjoy the podcast, the best way to support us is to share it with your colleagues and friends. We also really appreciate your reviews and ratings wherever you listen to podcasts. We love hearing feedback from our listeners, so please don't hesitate to get in touch. Again, you'll find all the details in our show notes. See you next week.